I had several people ask me to keep the pictures running through this sermon, you know, but I won't do that to you today, but feel free to come up and I'll pass the phone around, you know, so you can see all the wonderful pictures. But we've been having, I have really enjoyed, you know, whenever you teach a Bible class or something like that and really get into the study, the teacher often gets more out of it than anybody else.
True, especially when nobody comes.
And I have thoroughly been enjoying our Wednesday night online classes on First Peter. And we're still going through those and picking out, we're not going through it verse by verse. So if you're like, well, I want to hear from the beginning, that's okay. You come in, we'll get another theme running through and you'll enjoy First Peter. We've been talking about just, like I said, different themes running through the book. And there's a one theme that I'd like to come back to talk about this morning. And that's the term that Peter uses to describe the audience of the letter. He uses a term that is very interesting. He calls them, and we saw that in chapter 2, verse 11, from Lori's reading today, but he calls them foreigners and exiles. Now, as he calls them this, they haven't moved. Now, some of them do. They have to wander from place to place. We know Paul had several companions who had moved, like Aquila and Priscilla, who had moved to several places in the Roman Empire, and he still kept in contact with them. But the people that Peter's writing to, he's not calling them foreigners and exiles because they are away from their natural home. They're probably still living in the place they grew up, that they were born and grew up in. Not a lot of mobility like there is today, where you can move from a place like Missouri to California or something like that. Not as much mobility. So he's not writing to people who left home. He's writing to people who, even though they physically may not have moved, spiritually, dramatic transformation has taken place. And it is as if they are aliens coming from a whole nother world. And he doesn't call them foreigners and exiles because they've been transported from the earth to the kingdom of heaven. He calls them foreigners and exiles with the mindset of, that is your home. Heaven is not where you're going to or where you've gone to, but heaven is right now where you are from. Like I said, you may not have moved your physical location, but heaven is now where you're from. And your time now spent on this earth is a time of being sent from that heavenly home in order to bring about the kingdom of heaven in your place. I know many of you, you've grown up here in the California area, or maybe you're born somewhere else, but you're, I don't know, you may feel very well established here. Sierra Madre is such a nice, pleasant community, you know, the wonderful little Main Street area, Arcadia, San Gabriel, South Pasadena, you know, Altadena, they all wonderful areas. And you just feel like you're at home when you're there. And we were gone for 2 weeks. And I tell you, it was so nice to get back to my own bed last night. Not that we had an uncomfortable bed, but it's my bed. It molds and conforms to me, you know, and I feel good getting back to my bed. But as nice as it is here, because we have been bought by Jesus Christ, because we have put our trust in him, we have been, and the language is very interesting. Peter uses language, Jesus uses the language in John chapter 3, but we have been born again, so, of something that is eternal. Something that is otherworldly. Our home has been changed. And now, when we go to Sierra Madre or Altadena or South Paz or, you know, wherever you're going, you are now traveling to there. you're traveling to the house that you've lived in for years. You're traveling to the community and to the school system and to the workplace that you've known for years. But you're no longer from there. You're traveling there, having been sent there as now foreigners and exiles. And again, as Lori read, we come there with a purpose. And that purpose is to proclaim the mighty acts of him who has called us out of darkness into his wonderful light. I hope you spend some time just sitting in your house this week and just meditating on, you know what? I love my stuff. I love my bed. I love my community and my neighbors. This is not my home though. I've been sent here to do a great work. And I think about foreigners and exiles, and we even see this in our world today, especially in places like war-torn Europe or whatever. You often think of the refugee that is having to leave and find a new place. And no one wants to really feel like that kind of refugee. That when I bring up that thought of exile, even an Israelite would have heard that word exile, and their initial impression would have been, I remember exile from my history. We were in exile in Egypt when we were enslaved there. We were in exile in Assyria and in Babylon. And those were not great times for us. But Peter seems to use it as a term of excitement, a term of possibilities, opportunities, as he uses that word foreigner and exile. Again, not as someone who is victimized, but as someone who is sent. And to have that kind of mindset is so interesting. It makes me want to go back to the Old Testament and to other places and to hear how the Israelites, especially, but others as in the New Testament as well, how they carried themselves, how they acted, how they used the opportunity for exile to do the Lord's work. And I'd like to talk about three things that I hope that we can do as exiles in this world that I think help us in that purpose of, again, proclaiming the mighty acts of God who brought us out of darkness into his wonderful light. The first thing that we need to do is we need to see the presence of God here. Sight can be very clouded by many things. In the Bible, sight is clouded by problems that happen, but sight is also clouded by even great things that happen and positive things that can happen. And there are many things that cause us to forget or to not see clearly. One of my favorite stories is Ezekiel. And in Ezekiel chapter 1, Ezekiel begins, he begins the whole book with, I think, the most fascinating verse. Now, a lot of us know some things about that first chapter. He gives this incredible vision of these angelic figures riding on chariots that the wheels don't turn, but they still move in all these directions. It is weird. And then you might even think of maybe you've heard that that wheel within a wheel that's found in that. I'm not going to explain that because I have no idea what he's talking. Let's be honest. It is a wild vision that he has. Matter of fact, at the end of the chapter, he says in verse 28, he says, "This was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord." So he sees this wild vision. It's not the Lord that he sees. It's not even the glory of the Lord that he sees. It's not even the likeness of the glory of the Lord that he sees. It's the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord. So even as incredible as it is still so far removed from exactly what God would look like that he's not trying to, he doesn't hide that. He's like, no, this is a pale imitation of what, you know, God is really like. So it's an incredible vision. But the most important thing about this vision to me is in chapter 1, verse 1, where he says, in my 30th year, in the fourth month, on the fifth day, while I was among the exiles by the Kabar River, the heavens were opened, and I saw visions of God. This incredible vision of the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord happens in Babylon. I would expect there to be visions like Isaiah saw in Isaiah chapter 6. I expect there to be visions in a temple, in the temple of the Lord. I expect there to be visions in Jerusalem where the Lord himself said, my name shall be there. The temple was the place where God, he filled the temple in such a way that he drove the priests out with the enlarging cloud that he filled the temple with when it was dedicated. I expect that kind of stuff to happen in Jerusalem. I don't expect to find it at the Kabar River, at the site of in Babylon, where they don't really have a place. They just got to gather by the riverside just to have a little moment away from all the environment of the paganism and the noise of Babylon, just to find a quiet place to get away and have a time of prayer. But God comes there. How awesome that must have been for them. I mean, their temple had been destroyed, Jerusalem in ruins. They've been taken off the land that God promised to give them. Everything about their sight was that God has left us because he's taken us off our land and taken us away from promised places. And God moves with them. God comes to join them and visits them. And Ezekiel gets to see this. We kind of have that role, I think, in the world around us. We have that prophetic vision because, and when I mean a prophetic vision, I think people often think, well, prophets, they always see the future. That's what makes them prophets. They do that every once in a while, but that's a super minority of the visions that they have. What prophets do is prophets challenge the way you see things. If you look at this environment and say, this just seems to be a completely hopeless environment, a prophet will come along and say, oh no, let me show you who God is, and let me fill you with the hope of his restoration and of his presence. A prophet may go the opposite as well. He may come into a time when the nation is strong, everybody feels good, and most of the preachers around are saying, "Ooh, this is a wonderful time." And a prophet comes in and says, "Oh no, underneath the surface of all that is incredible sin that needs to be." A prophet always sees differently. That's really our role here. I think we have an Ezekiel kind of role. Is we come in, we've been sent into this world in order to see God at work. And it's easy to, I feel like I'm already seeing him right now. It's easy to see him in the gathering of the saints. But to see him everywhere else, we miss him because we don't have our eyes open to him. We believe that our God is active in this world. We believe that he hasn't just left it and is off in some distant corner of space, just waiting for us to finally get to him when we die. But we believe in a God who creates this world, provides for this world, redeems this world, and is working in this world. And we believe in a God who is already, even before our mouths open, we believe in a God who is already working on the hearts and minds of the people here. We believe, as it says in Romans chapter 1, he is already displaying who he is through the creation and many other ways. He is calling people to him. I don't think they get the fullness of his revelation in those ways, but he's at work. I believe in a God who is alive and at work. And we're supposed to be the ones who see that. Perhaps there's been occasions where, I don't know, maybe it was a messenger who brought you made some statement to you, and you realize, you know what, that just feels like a message I needed to hear from God. They might even be a believer sometimes. I've had that numerous times where somebody came and told me something, and I'm like, you know, that person is exactly right. I don't think they have any faith at all. But I feel like I heard something that I needed to. That's a message from God. I believe that that he is blessing people. He's making, as Jesus says, he makes the rain to fall on the just and the unjust, the sun to shine on both. And can we not be the ones who see that wonderful work and to do the next step, and that is to name it. To name it, not as coincidence, not as just, you know, not as luck or fate, but to name it as, you know, our God is at work here, and to give him praise in the middle of this land. Another exile that I think it's absolutely important for us to see, and that I think Peter must have been thinking about as he wrote so positively about what it is, and so powerfully about what it is to be a foreigner in exile. I think of Daniel and his friends who were taken off into captivity. And in Daniel chapter 3, Daniel chapter 4, there is this incredible verse. Listen to this. Chapter 4, verse 2. The writer, "It is my pleasure to tell you about the miraculous signs and wonders that the Most High God has performed for me. How great are his signs, how mighty his wonders. His kingdom is an eternal kingdom. His dominion endures from generation to generation." It don't get no better than that. This is the highest of praise that we read in Scripture. And do you know who said that? It's not Daniel. It's not Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. It's King Nebuchadnezzar, a violent pagan king who has devoted his life to mercilessly expanding his kingdom and stealing the best from the lands around him. That's what he says about God. And that's because he has been surrounded by people like Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who, when he has a vision, Daniel's able to say, "It's not me, but it's God who gave you that vision. And it's not me, but it's God who can also give you the interpretation of this vision." And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who are able to say, when they won't bow down to that golden statue and are threatened with being thrown into a fiery furnace, that they say, we don't care if God rescues us or not. We are not going to bow down to that statue. Or it's a Daniel who knows the law that says, you shall not pray but to the king. And he prays anyway, because he sees and claims something higher than the king of Babylon. And in king of Babylon's mind, nothing's higher than that. But he goes and he names it. No. It's not, the power is not from you. It is from God. That's part of that testifying that we do. We see the work of God in people's lives, and we are the ones who name it. I'm so glad that I'm so glad that God is leading you along that way. I'm so glad that God has given you some wisdom for making that decision. I'm so glad that God has prospered you and given you all the things that you have. It's our place to name it because we know the source. And so we name it. Daniel's willing to do that. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are willing to name it. It's the job of the exiles to name it. And that's just what we do. So that's part of our testimony. We see where God is at work. We point it out and name it. This is the work of God. And then the final thing we get to do is we claim it. We see it, we name it, and we claim it. And even if that part doesn't want to relent to God, we still claim it for God anyway. I'm just amazed that there's a United States flag on the moon. I'm like, that takes a lot to be able to say, yeah, we claim this. We plant our flag here. And that just seems weird to us. You know, our world today, we don't plant flags anymore. It seems like, you know, it's not like there's a new world anymore that's unexplored, you know, or anything like that. We don't plant flags. So we might as well go plant a flag on the moon because there's nothing else for us to plant our flag down here, you know? But that's the kingdom of heaven. The kingdom of heaven is expanding and invading, and we are a part of that, being sent as its invading force into this world. And there are places that we place the flag and would say, we claim this place. We claim this person in the name of the kingdom of God. In Jeremiah 29, the Babylonians have taken many of the people from Judah into exile. And Jeremiah, in Jeremiah 29, he goes and he writes the exiles a letter. And in that letter, he makes some what they thought were ridiculous statements. When he says, you're going into exile, while you're there, build houses and settle down, plant gardens and eat what they produce. Marry, have sons and daughters, find wives for your sons and give your daughters in marriage. So they may have sons and daughters, build those generations. Increase in number there, do not decrease. Also seek the peace and prosperity of the city to which I have carried you in exile. Pray to the Lord for it, because if it prospers, you too will prosper. Now, the people of Judah heard about this letter that was sent. They were enraged. How dare you act as if the exiles were sent there by God? And how dare you say that they make their home there and add to the blessings of Babylon? It's just, I don't know, you guys, let's see. I'm still getting my football team imageries right here. Because Chargers, that was the big enemy, you know. It was one of not a big enemy, but maybe more this year, hopefully. But anyway, to the Chiefs, you know, we had Chiefs and Raiders and, you know, Chargers and stuff. But it'd be like, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs taking Patrick Mahomes and saying, you know what, I think we'll just send him over to the Chargers, you know, although they got a great quarterback. Anyway, we're going to give our best and our brightest over there to them and see what happens. You don't do that. That's the rival. And here's Jeremiah saying, hey, while you're there, give your best. This is no... Don't act like you're in some prison camp trying to escape. Just make your home there. And what's he doing? He's saying, claim that place. Claim that place as the people of God. Claim it. So as you are going into your neighborhoods, you're going into your home, you're going into the supermarket and you're going into, you know, everywhere in your community, the schools or wherever you go, you claim that and say, as long as I have something to do with this, this will be a place for God. This will be a place. In one of my favorite verses that I have of Jesus is, you know, when Jesus went before Pilate, and that was a weird time. Jesus goes before all these authorities, and most of the time people are firing questions at him, and he won't answer. He doesn't answer their accusations. And then all of a sudden, they'll make a statement where he feels like he needs to respond. He does that with Pilate. Oh, the voices are coming from everywhere. This guy claims to be king. He claims to be the Son of God. He's trouble for you Romans, because there's no telling what he's gonna do in this land, you know, and maybe raise up a rebellion against Roman occupation. There's no telling. You ought to treat this man as a criminal and have him crucified. And he goes before Pilate and all these voices, and he says nothing. Pilate says, "Do you refuse to speak to me?" This is John 19, verse 10. "Don't you realize that I have power either to free you or to crucify you?" Well, now you said something Jesus has got to respond to. And Jesus answered, "You would have no power over me if it were not given to you from above." And Jesus is in the governor's palace on trial before the most important man in the land at that time as representative of Caesar in Rome. And he plants his flag and says, "Nah, this isn't your place. This is God's." And everything about him may say, I may look like a victim here, but I've been sent. I've been sent. My kingdom is not of this world, but I claim the power here. Again, we see what God is doing. We name it along the way, and we claim it in our lives. We are not refugees. We are sent. We are not victimized here. We are messengers. And we have not been left imprisoned. We have been left here as opportunity for the kingdom of God to expand in us. I hope we're able to talk about this more specifically in our talk back session. But I do hope that you're thinking and seeing yourself in a whole different light. I am an exile here, and what a wonderful place for me to be, to do what God needs me to do. Let's stand. Let's sing together.